ओम गिरिजमिनन्दस्य जनार्जनशलभया चक्षुस्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदमायं ददति सर्वगन्धिकम् Reading from Lord Brahma's Prayers to Lord Krishna, chapter 14, very important 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Brahma, who is the most advanced, exalted of intelligent persons within the universe, has just been completely bewildered by the potency of Krishna and is understood. Has understood that Krishna's power, his beauty, his form, is completely beyond his ability to understand, to comprehend. He's seen Krishna expand himself into countless cowherd boys and calves, and seen Krishna then retract that into Vishnu forms, forearm Vishnu forms. And then seeing Krishna expand into universes wherein each living entity was simply worshipping Krishna, and then everything being retracted into him, this little cowherd boy standing very beautifully before Brahma. Young, very young, because this is before Krishna was even 5 years old, so he's perhaps before, this is before Krishna has been given charge of the cows. So he's understanding, he's looking at Krishna, a four-year-old child, and understanding that he is the source of everything, material universes, spiritual universes, all living entities, and he's completely awestruck. And he understands that he's with his taking the cows and the boys, he has superficially interfered with Krishna's pastimes. Actually, he was simply incorporated by Krishna's desire into his pastimes. This is one of Krishna's pastimes. But he felt he's committed an offense, and he's begging Krishna for forgiveness. And he's understanding that Krishna's body possesses inconceivable power, and Krishna himself, by his potencies, by his maya, by his shakti, by his yoga maya, mahamaya, they are unlimitedly powerful and capable of doing everything and anything. And the last text we read was 21, where ko vetti bhumam Bhagavan Paratman, all different names of Krishna, where he's explaining Yogeshvara Bhavatath Tilokyam Kva Chakatam Sva Va Kativa Kadeti Vistarayan Kvidasi Yogamayam. That is Yogamaya. No one can understand the mystery of how your spiritual energy is working. Everything for Krishna is his spiritual energy. There is no material energy from Krishna's point of view. He, just like two examples are usually given. There is electricity, and the electricity may be turned into cooling energy or heating energy, but it's the same electricity. Or the government may run the prison house, or the educational institutions, but it's still the same energy of the government doing it. It's just used in different ways according to the need. So for Krishna, everything is completely spiritual, like on the example will be given later, like on the sun. There's no question of day and night on the sun. That is for us. Concept of day and night is relevant for us so far below and so distant in our own particular situations. For Krishna, everything is wonderful. No one can understand, he said, the mystery of how your spiritual energy acts. He's specifically talking about his pastimes in the material world, everywhere. He's just noted that Krishna is in the material world, but the material world is within him. So this is quite astounding, inconceivable. So he continues speaking. Brahma continues with his prayers, describing Krishna's Krishna's Maya, how it influences everything, his potency. We usually translate Maya as illusion, but yet there is a spiritual Maya, and that also creates an illusion, because the living entity, ourselves, we can only possess, understand a small part of reality. Krishna is the only one who knows reality in totality. We possess a small vision of what exists. And when we accept that by the Lord's Maya as reality, then we are under the influence of illusion. We accept that as the totality of reality. We're under the, and this is true in the spiritual, under the spiritual potency of Yogamaya as well as Mahamaya, the material potency. So Brahma continues saying that through that, I'll read it. Therefore, this entire universe, which is like a dream, is by nature unreal. Nevertheless, it appears real. And thus it covers one's consciousness and assails one with repeated miseries. It's unreal, but due to the influence of Maya, Mahamaya, because we're trying to enjoy it, it appears real. And we try to enjoy that, because our consciousness is covered. And the result is, atta eva maya tari samsareda duk, repeated miseries. And those miseries repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat, because we are under the influence of illusion. We don't understand the very nature of material existence means suffering. That's what illusion offers us. A vision that sometime, if I just make the proper arrangements, I'll be able to enjoy myself in this world. That's the gift of Maya or illusion. But the atta eva maya tare samsareda duk, we never get the happiness, we just simply get the miseries of repeated birth and death. And this is universal in the sense that it goes from the Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avatuna Arjuna, from the topmost planet to the lowest planet in this world. And no situation, no body, no situation is one that ultimately awards happiness. Because we're out of our element, our spiritual element. We simply don't belong here. So Brahma continues, this universe appears real because it is manifest by the potency of illusion emanating from you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of eternal happiness and knowledge. So he's making a difference here of two different type of energies that Krishna has. One is his illusion, which manifests the material world, which covers our ability to see things as they are. And on the other hand, his unlimited forms, Krishna's own unlimited forms, which Brahma has just seen manifest from Krishna. And these, on the other hand, don't award misery like the material universes do, but they are full of eternal happiness and knowledge, like going back to the analogy of the prison house, it awards the prison house business is to award misery. Well, the government's relationship with the free citizens and the facilities it gives, providing education, this facility, that facility, so much more freedom, is to award facility for happiness and advancement. So two different energies of the Lord here. We'll read the purport here. As an object of enjoyment or a permanent residence for the conditioned souls, the material universe is certainly an illusion, certainly illusion. Nothing more than a dream. Why is it nothing more than a dream? Why is the material world compared to a dream? It's temporary. Who said that? Why is so a dream? Prabhupada once said, someone asked him about the significance of dreams, and Prabhupada replied, night dream, day dream, it's all the same. You've heard that one before, yes? That's famous. Night dream, day dream, it's all the same. The specific quality of a night dream is that when you're involved in it, you experience everything as so important, as so real. But then you wake up and it's over. And you may, if it was an enjoyable dream, you may hanker to be back in that dream. And if it was a horrible, torturous dream, you may even will yourself to awaken due to the misery of it. But how is that different from the life in the material world that is? When you awaken, when you're finished with it, when it ends, it's over. And you go on to something else. You go on to a different aspect of life. So it's an object of, so therefore it's illusory. It's false. It's like a dream. One may give the analogy that the vision of abundant water in a desert is no more than a dream, although real water exists elsewhere. Similarly, the vision of home, happiness, and reality within matter is certainly no better than a foolish dream in which repeated miseries appear. And all the while we're hoping that in the future, if I just do this and that, it will turn sweet. But it can't. The material world is not a place to extract happiness from. And we see this because that's the philosophy nowadays, is that enjoy, enjoy, enjoy as much sense pleasure as you can. But the result is that people are not more happy. Rather, they're more lonely, more frightened, and more miserable, and more needing. Needy and needing. They're needy, they have more desires, and they need so many things. So, if we increase the amount that we need, we will... decrease the percentage of desires we can satisfy, and therefore frustration occurs. Previously, people were so much more dutiful, and they didn't expect just pleasure, unending pleasure from life, and people were much more satisfied with that viewpoint of life. Life is what it is. And when you expect so much from it, you expect it to be the spiritual world, then you suffer, because it certainly will let you down a billion times over, every day, practically speaking. But if you expect it to be a place where you dutifully work and serve others, then it gives happiness, it gives some distress, but it gives happiness and you're satisfied. Because what affects us is not the world as much as what we think about it. How we view it, our mind is what really affects us. Not the world. Nor the body. The body is what it is. But when we look at it as the source of enjoyment, it becomes the source of misery, just to balance out our insane viewpoint, our foolish viewpoint. But real happiness, the happiness that we truly look for, it does exist. And the example Jiva Goswami gives in probably Bhagavat Sandarbha is, if you see a rope, and what it, they always use in Vedic philosophy, they always talk about ropes and snakes. So if you see a rope and think it's a mistake, oh, a snake, I'm a snake. If you think it's a snake, that's certainly an illusion, and you become terrified. So then you see it's not a snake, you see it's a rope. So you realize your thinking it was a snake was false. But that, does that mean that no snakes exist? No, that's by your taking the conception of snake and superimposing it on the rope. That implies that snakes exist. This is actually Kant's basic argument of the existence of God, that the concept of God exists, and the concept of God includes the concept of existence, because if God wouldn't be God unless he had existence too. So if the concept of a God is there, that concept of God includes existence. So therefore, if the concept exists, therefore God exists. That's the basic, his basic argument. Because the concept couldn't exist without the existence of God. Just like we'd say the concept of snake couldn't exist without a snake existing. That's his argument. And it's, but you can't logically prove the existence of God. Either have the piety to see it, or you gain the piety to see it, or you don't. So therefore someone will break apart that argument. But in any case, the vision of home, happiness, and reality within matter is certainly no better than a foolish dream in which repeated miseries appear. In another sense, so he's now in the purport, our BBT persons are saying that the material world is false. Like a snake, a rope thought of as a snake is false. But in another sense, however, the universe is real. In his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Sri Madhvacharya has confirmed this by quoting the following statement from the Vedic Shruti Mantras. Satyam hi evadam vishvam asri jata. This universe created by the Lord is real. The perfect authority of the Vedas thus certifies this universe to be real. Nevertheless, because our knowledge is stolen by illusion, as indicated here by the word astadishanam, which is translated in the word by words as wherein awareness becomes covered over, we cannot properly understand this universe or the Supreme Lord who has created it. As the expansion of Lord Krishna, the universe is real and is meant for being engaged in his service. One who accepts the kingdom of God as home, the Lord himself as the object of love, and the material world as paraphernalia for being engaged in the Lord's service, dwells within eternal reality wherever he may go within the material or spiritual worlds. So the fault isn't on the material world. The part of the material world, we say the material world is a place of misery, as if it's causing the misery. But actually, the material world, again, isn't causing the misery. It's our view of the material world. And what is our view of the material world that causes misery? Yes, that the purpose of the material world is to make me happy, to satisfy my senses, and therefore it turns into a tiger with fangs and bites us continuously. But if we see the material world with a different mind, as Krishna's energy and therefore meant to be used in his service, then Vishwapurnam Sukhayate, it becomes a completely blissful place. The material world neither rewards happiness or distress. In fact, it's our mind that is the cause of distress or happiness. We'll read the comment of Srila Swami on this text about the reality or illusoriness of the material world. Srila Swami says, no, we won't read his comment. We'll read that of Sanatana Goswami. He says, what to speak of the real status of the different pastimes of your various incarnations? Even this material creation, although factually false and so on, appears by connection with you as if real and so on. This is spoken by the verse beginning, Tasmat. So, because he's just spoken in the last verse about the incarnations. Now he says, the material world, by your illusion, appears to be one thing, although it's another. By the expansion of your yogamaya means because of your playing, or the falseness of the universe having been spoken of by the three verses beginning Atiraiva, 16 through 18, and then refuting the next three verses, the doubt that the Lord is included within the material universe. Now the summarization is made by the verse beginning Tasmat. Because of my revealing to my mother the falseness of that material universe within myself, which comes by connection with the line beginning Asya. This is more technical than I was thinking. The material world having a real identity or being real by connection with the endless, with Krishna, it is like a dream, not eternal. And by connection with the eternal, it is eternal. So it's both, he's just said both. It's not eternal, but by connection with the eternal, it is eternal. So how is the material world connected with the eternal and therefore eternal? It's either manifest or unmanifest, but that energy is always present. Here's Sridhar Swami's comment. Granted that the greatness of these incarnations from the previous text is inconceivable, why is it that this unreal material manifestation appears to be real? This doubt is summarized in detail and refuted in the verse beginning Tasma. Asta Dishanam means deprived of wisdom. Although arising within you, that which is subject to destruction appears as if real, the material world. Which is an indirect reference to the idea that it appears as if eternal. And this is how the material world, in what sense it's a dream, it's temporary. It appears to be real, and therefore it's so disappointing. It appears to be eternal, so disappointing. It appears, Sridhar Swami says, as if eternal, as if happy, and as if conscious. In each of these cases, by the modes of material nature, which have their basis in you. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this text. He comments, the universe appears real because it is manifested by the illusory energy of you, whose unlimited transcendental forms are full of Sandini Shakti, Nitya, Ladini Shakti, Sukha, and Sambit Shakti, Vodha, knowledge. Another meaning is, O Lord, your form is full of mercy, whereas this universe is full of inauspiciousness. What is the necessity of considering this universe at all if it's false, one can ask? So why should we even think or talk about it? But the world is not false. From the point of view of material pleasure, the ignorant think it's wonderful. But in reality, it is full of misery. Because it is temporary. Same idea. Text 23. You are the Supreme One. You are the one Supreme Soul. The primeval Supreme Personality. The Absolute Truth. So he's saying who Krishna is and what is actually real. You are self-manifested. What is the Sanskrit for self-manifested? Svayam Jyoti. Self manifested, and Swayam Prakash means self-effulgent. This is self-effulgent too, and self-manifest. Swayam Jyoti, self-manifest, endless and beginningless. Just remember, he's talking to Krishna, this most beautiful cowherd boy who's standing in front of him. And he's saying, you are self-manifest, you are endless. He's there in a form of a young boy, but he's endless, infallible, eternal, perfect and complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Nothing, no upadhi, or nothing to do with matter covers you. No identification is there. Nothing designates you. Your happiness can never be obstructed. Just conceive of what that means. And this is what everyone in the material world is trying to attain. I want to be one whose happiness is never obstructed. And what is the basic system that people use to make their happiness unobstructed? What is the attempt?
Wealth.
Yes, wealth. This is the basic conception that the more money I have, because money means Lakshmi, Shakti, power. And with power, I can do anything. I can do what I want. I can control. Ishwaraham, aham bhogi. I can enjoy. And then, aham suki. I'm happy, therefore. So we can see clearly how everyone ultimately is envious of Krishna's position. This is what makes the world go round. They call it the golden rule. He who has the gold makes the rule. Hi, Maya. That's the problem when I say something simple. I can't understand. What is it? Now say that in English. 100%. 100%. Okay. Thank you. Yes. So this is Krishna's position. All material bodies. Self-manifest. You are the one supreme soul, this primal supreme personality, the absolute truth. You are self-manifested, endless and beginningless. You are eternal and infallible. What happens when someone tells another person in the material world that they've made a mistake? What immediately comes up, generally speaking? Huh? You know, some sort of defending, or because everyone wants to be thought of like Krishna, infallible, perfect, complete, without any rival, and free from all material designations. Your happiness can never be obstructed, nor have you any connection with material contamination. Indeed, you are the indestructible nectar of immortality. Everyone is waiting for someone to say that to them. You are the indestructible nectar of immortality, dear. Srila Sridhar Swami, this is the purport here. Srila Sridhar Swami explains how the various terms of this verse demonstrate that the transcendental body of Lord Krishna is free from the characteristics of material bodies. So although we're all longing to have those qualities, we have none of them. All material bodies go through six phases: birth, growth, maturity, reproduction, decline, and destruction. But Lord Krishna does not take material birth, since he is the original reality, a fact clearly indicated here by the word adya, original. We take our material birth within a particular material atmosphere. In material bodies, there are amalgamations of various material elements. Since Lord Krishna existed long before the creation of any material atmosphere or element, there is no question of material birth for his transcendental body. He is the creator. The creator creates matter. The creator, therefore, existed before the creation of matter. And the creator, therefore, by definition, cannot have a material body. Similarly, the word purna, meaning full and complete, refutes the concept that Lord Krishna could grow, since he is ever existing in fullness. When one's material body becomes mature, one can no longer enjoy as a youth. But the words ajasra sukha, enjoying unobstructed happiness, indicates that Lord Krishna's body never reaches so-called middle age, since it is always full of spiritual youthful bliss. The word akshara, undiminishing, refutes the possibility that Lord Krishna's body grows old or declines. And the word amrita, immortal, negates the possibility of death. Śrīla Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura, I'll read his comment. Brahma prayed, although you do have infinite forms, you are also present in one transcendental form by your inconceivable energy. Because remember, he's talking to Krishna right before him. You are the one supreme soul, Eka Atma. And at the same time, you expand yourself as the super soul to enter every living being. Here, Krishna may protest. But the super soul has no form. He is not a person. After all, the word person generally refers to a being that has a form. You say, I'm a person. Am I a young person? Brahma replies, no, you are the oldest. He's looking right at Krishna, who's 4 or 5 years old, perhaps. No, you're the oldest. Krishna protests, I'm the son of Nanda Baba, and I'm a young boy of Braja. It is not right to say that I am the oldest. Brahma, it is true that you're the son of Nanda, but it is also true that you exist eternally in all three phases of time, past, present, and future. Therefore, you are the oldest person. Krishna, the supreme person, Purusha, you describe as the creator of time, karma, and everything else. How is it possible that I am he? Brahma, please do not argue. You are self-effulgent, Swayam Jyoti. It's clear who you are. Krishna, am I like the sun, limited within a certain area of space? Because the sun is the example that we have of something that's Swayam Jyoti. From itself, its own light is coming. So Krishna says, am I like the sun? You say I'm Swayam Jyoti, like the sun, self-illuminating. Am I like the sun then, limited within a certain area of space? No, you are limitless, Ananta. So all these are Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura, as all the acharyas are taking different words that Brahma uses to describe Krishna in the text and showing the connection between these words and how wonderful they are. No, you are not limited within a certain area of space. You are limitless, Ananta. Not restricted by time and space. Your other avatars are also the same. So we can't understand what this means. That Krishna, within a form, and the other avatars are still unlimited in time and space. They're everywhere. Is this wonderful? Yes, this is wonderful. Krishna, the Supreme has many incarnations. So am I just one of them? Brahma, you are the source, Adya, the original of all avatars, the root of all incarnations. Krishna, in the next lifetime of Brahma, will I again incarnate in this form? What does Brahma say? Yes or no?
Yes.
All those who think yes, raise your hand. Krishna, in the next lifetime of Brahma, will I again incarnate in this form? All those who say yes, raise your hand. All those who say no, raise your hand. All those who are undecided, raise your hand. Who don't want to commit themselves because they don't want to be tricked.
He never leaves that form.
said he never leaves that form. And Brahma says, no, you are nitya, eternal. Although the universe is ancient, real, and eternal, at the end of my lifetime, Brahma says, it is no longer manifested in the same form. Because it will disappear, therefore, it is anitya, temporary. On the other hand, you will remain eternally in this form as the son of Nanda. Therefore, your form is eternal and unchanging because you are the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic literature has confirmed this, and then he has a whole list of verses from Yo Sao Soye Tishtati. Lord Krishna is the same Supreme Personality of Godhead who formerly appeared in the Suryavamsa of Lord Ram. Many quotations from different of the Vedic literatures, Gopal Tapani, etc., and Bhagavad Gita. But Gopal Tapani says, Lord Krishna, whose form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, and who sits under a kalpa viksha tree in Vrindavan forest, is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. You yourself affirm this in the Bhagavad Gita. Brahma says, Brahmanohi pratishtaham, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Krishna says, this goes on. But those who have bodies are subjected to the six transformations and are therefore disintegrating at every moment. How does that make you feel? You're disintegrating at every moment. I feel when you get older, it sort of feels like that. How is it possible that I am like that? I have a form. Everyone was a form, disintegrates. Brahma, no, you are not like that. You are unchanging and indestructible. Akshara. Krishna, those who have bodies are subjected to happiness and distress. Brahma, you are always full of bliss. Ajasra sukha. You are always blissful. Krishna, I'm always blissful, but as a child I was greedy to drink my mother's breast milk and steal the gopis' butter and yogurt. As a boy I showed anger towards Kaliya and a host of others. In my teenage years, I wanted to enjoy with the gopis. Therefore, I am impure and contaminated by lust and a host of other vices. Brahma, that is not true. You are spotless, Niranjana. Your so-called lust and other qualities are all pure and spiritual. Krishna, still, I'm dependent on the gopis and many others because I need them. Therefore, I'm not perfect and complete. Brahma, you are perfect and complete. Purna. So one by one he's explaining each of the words, expanding the meaning. You are being controlled by the prema of your devotees. The love of your devotees does not negate your perfection and completeness. Krishna, is there someone else like me? Any volunteers? No, can't. Better to be a servant. Krishna even wants to be a servant. He wants to taste that which what the devotees taste by serving him. Brahma, no one else is like you. You are beyond compare, Adroya. Krishna, very well then, because there is no one else like me, I am therefore the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, many people think I'm simply a transformation of transcendental knowledge. Impersonalist. Brahma, you are not a transformation of transcendental knowledge. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad states, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond both knowledge and ignorance. This is so because you are beyond all limiting designations. In the Shruti Shastra, it is said, Amritam Shastratam Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternal. He is far beyond any limiting designations. In this passage, the word Amrita may also be interpreted to mean he who never dies.
Imaginary dialogue.
No, you can't say imaginary. But you cannot say, Krishna can say, you can say that, Krishna can say like this, if Brahma says like this. But the imagination or the mind of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur manifests Krishna really.
Hasn't happened right at that time, and Acharya Rasa was giving extended sort of my interpretation of what he meant and what he meant.
But when, it's not exactly like that. None of the acharyas would agree with that. because how the acharyas realize these things is something that is beyond our understanding. What, like when Advaita Acharya said to Mahaprabhu, your mind is Vrindavan. So within the mind and heart of a pure devotee, Krishna's pastimes are going on. This is where this type of genius comes from. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is especially wonderful in manifesting Krishna's pastimes in this way. So we can't say imagination, but we can say it comes from the pure mind of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is accessing Krishna's lila. Where is that? There's one part of it in the second canto, one purport. It says that the pure devotees, they are just like we watch television. Of course, none of us watch television. But just as a person watches television, a pure devotee watches Krishna's pastimes going on in the television of his heart. So that's where this kind of thing comes from. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as we read his commentaries, they are astoundingly wonderful. Astoundingly wonderful. Text 24. So how does one realize these things about Krishna? The next verse explains. Those who have received the clear vision of knowledge from the sun-like spiritual master can see you in this way, as the very soul of all souls, the supersoul of everyone's own self. Thus understanding your original personality, they are able to cross over the ocean of illusory material existence. So Srila Sridhar Swami comments that they cross over the material existence by virtue of this knowledge. Krishna himself says this. Janma karma cha me divyameva myogati tatvata tatvadayam puna janma naiti mameti so arjuna. That just by knowing Krishna's positions, birth and activities, one is liberated and doesn't have to take birth again in this material world. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains this in relationship to a Brahmavadi, an impersonalist, and how he crosses over. He has Brahma's prayers like this. With devotion, the impersonalist, he says, even the gist of this verse is, even the worshippers of your future as impersonal Brahman can, if they get the good fortune of devotion to your personal form as Paramatma, they can develop faith in you and attain the status of Shanta Bhakta, Shantaras, like the four Kumaras, devotees in the rasa of neutrality or passive adoration. Brahma prayed, with devotion they see Krishna as the supersoul, who is a charming, handsome personal form that delights the eyes, mind, and heart. They realize that Krishna has all the qualities described in the previous verse, and that he is the supersoul present in the hearts of all living entities. This is also described in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. By understanding that Sri Krishna is the supersoul, one attains the neutral stage of devotional service, Shantaras. The question may be asked, how does this take place? How does an impersonalist understand that Krishna is all pervading through his form of the supersoul? And Brahma answers, the spiritual master is like the sun. By studying the Upanishads under him and obtaining his mercy, one attains the proper vision to see Krishna as Paramatma and the knowledge how to cross over the ocean of illusion known as material existence. A person, um, person mistakes a rope for a snake, now we're into ropes and snakes again, becomes fearful. Yes? If you're walking outside and there's a rope and you think it's a snake, terror enters the heart. It doesn't even pass through the intelligence. One naturally becomes afraid. But then he gives up his fear upon realizing that the so-called snake does not exist. It's only a rope. Similarly, for those who fail to recognize you as the supreme soul of all souls, the expansive illusory material existence arises, but knowledge of you at once causes it to subside. So once one understands the actual nature of existence, not in an illusory way, like one understands a piece of rope to be a snake, but understands the actual nature of the material world, material existence, then there is no illusion. There is no fear or illusion, and the material world doesn't exist anymore. So this has to do with crossing the material. Srila Swami explains, this text has to do with crossing the material universe due to knowledge. So this knowledge of who Krishna, of the nature or the relationship between the material existence and Krishna, how it's all Krishna, it removes all fear. The material world will stay the way it is. Like Maharaj Prickett, he got cursed to die. He was cursed to die. Like Vritrasura, he was fighting with Indra. But they were fearless, even confronting their own deaths and fighting. They did their duty, but they were fearless because they had the knowledge of understanding that they were living within Krishna's mercy. They saw the material world as Krishna's energy. And therefore, Vishwa Purna Sukhayate, the material world becomes a place of ecstasy because everywhere one sees Krishna. This is the in everything and everywhere. This is like a purport of that verse that Brahma said before, that Tateyunu Kampam Susumikshamano Punjane Vatmakipavapakam Muktipade Sadayabak. That if one sees Krishna's hand and everything, and sees his mercy, and offers his obeisances to Krishna, the spiritual world becomes his natural inheritance, because practically speaking, he's already in the spiritual world. Because he's seeing Krishna everywhere. And then if you're seeing Krishna in everything, and everywhere with great devotion, then you're in the spiritual world, practically speaking. So this is wonderful. So this is true knowledge. This is the benefit of great knowledge. The purport here, the second paragraph of the purport. To be trapped in a world in which all things are born and die is certainly a fearful experience. Anyone trapped in a dark place naturally becomes fearful. Since material life is always covered by the darkness of ignorance, every conditioned soul is fearful. So if the darkness is ignorance and light, so in the material world, everyone is in ignorance, no one has knowledge, and therefore it is darkness, and therefore there is fear. The material nature is not ultimately reality, and thus analysis of matter can never provide answers to ultimate questions. This dark, snake-like existence called material life immediately disappears as soon as one opens his eyes to the bright light of Krishna consciousness. In other words, as soon as one sees Krishna, is conscious of Krishna and everything, yomam paschati savatra savam chaimai paschati tasyaham sulava partha. Very easy, one attains Krishna very easily if one can see him in everything. This is knowledge, this is approaching Krishna through knowledge. Text 25. Srila Sanatana Goswami comments on 25. Jiva Goswami will read part of Jiva Goswami's comments. For the reason of being ignorant of you, Brahma says, Jiva Goswami is saying, on that basis, the whole material existence, beginning from the physical body, is generated by Maya, who takes advantage of the discrepancy. In other words, the superimposition of the mentality of I and mine is made upon the pure jiva. I and mine. I am my body, and that which I see is mine for my enjoyment. It's superimposed on the consciousness of the jiva. Therefore, by the knowledge of you that destroys the ignorance of you, which is the basis of material existence, the very cause of that superimposition, namely ignorance, is also eradicated. That eradication is explained with an example, with the words beginning vajram, snake and rope. This will also be described similarly in the 11th canto in the verse Bayam Vitiya Vinavesha Tasya Isha Vitesya Viparitos Vitiya, the 11th canto. This means that fear comes from a Bayam Dvitiya, seeing duality, seeing things separate from Krishna. That is the cause of fear. And knowledge means seeing things as they are, seeing things. Everything in relationship with Krishna. Ignorance, illusion means seeing things as if something could be separated from Krishna. Nothing can be separated from Krishna because He is the source of everything. So illusion, Maya, somewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada translates Maya. He says that Maya, when the spiritual energy, the Brahma Jyoti, is covered by Maya, It is material when it is seen as separate from Krishna. So a devotee, therefore, can be free from anxiety because he feels he is living in Krishna, living in Krishna's mercy. But this is an exalted state of consciousness. Okay, we'll stop here, and Krishna willing, we will continue and finish this section. Next class. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
Isn't in Vishnu pastimes that later on it is clear that Krishna didn't speak a word?
In reply?
Yes, nothing is good.
He just stared at him.
Yes. Oh. I think it was Vishnu, nothing else.
He didn't reply.
No, he didn't say anything. He was not even very pleased.
Brahma couldn't understand his mind, but there'll be anyway, you'll be interested to hear the rest of the explanations. If Bhakti says, then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. But Krishna's speaking also had, his not speaking also had meaning.
But in this, it says, I was alone myself, I'm just speaking from the impression of many years ago that I read this, that Krishna can react at all.
And interestingly enough, when Indra did something, and then he apologized, that he did something far worse than what Brahma did. He tried to kill all the residents of Vrindavan, including the cows, Krishna's mother and father, the cowboys, the cowgirls, everyone. And then when he came to apologize, Krishna replied to him.
Because he was so beautiful. And Krishna writes, he went to Surabhi first and pleased that
the. You know why he went to him? You know why he went to Swami first? But you know, where did that idea come from? Brahma.
Brahma told
him. You better take somebody with you, otherwise you won't say anything.
Brahma thought, oh, I know just what you're going through, Indra. Now Jagtini Mataji is giving an impression upon your impression, re-impressing something. And then Brahma said, oh, it was terrible. You better take Sarabhi with you. If you remember the fourth canto with the story of Paranjana, which is a very terrifying section of the Bhagavatam to read, and it evokes renunciation in the heart, then he's speaking that to Maharaj Prithinivarya. And then he says, I couldn't understand this analogy. Could you explain it again? And then he tells the same point very, very simply. And he gives an analogy that there's a deer sitting in a nice little garden eating very soft green grass with its mate. And in front of him is a tiger just crouched in the grass ready to jump out. And behind him is a hunter with his arrow pointed directly at the deer. So that's the kind of self-confidence. And the deer is happily munching away at the grass. That's the kind of self-confidence that's displayed in the material world. And soon as something a little bit happens, the weather changes, his air conditioner breaks, he gets in a car accident, his wife runs off with someone else, his children steals his car, his son, 18-year-old son, steals his car. Whatever. Something goes out of his control, then terror enters his heart. And that's like the terror that enters the heart of the deer when suddenly, as he's eating, he happens to look up, and just through the grass, he sees the pointed ears and tail of the tiger, and and then he tries to run, and he sees the hunter. So he's just getting a glimpse at those, and that's Krishna's kindness. In the heavenly planets, people don't experience any misery until the moment of their death. But in the earth, on the earth planet, by Krishna's grace, there's continuous, Krishna's letting us know continuously about the tiger and the hunter. Do you want to say something?
I was going to say that what looks like confidence is oftentimes inebriety or intoxicated. Because when there's an intoxicant, you can see any type of intoxicant, people's spirits rise. But it's not real, because the next morning their spirits go down and they have to re-engage in an artificial attempt to be confident and happy. So that there's a type of inebriety and success and trying to enjoy and having a run of enjoyment of the material world that makes you feel like one's very confident, but that kind of happiness is unstable.
By definition. Plus it's always temporary changing. So to try to be the controller is good luck.
It's like people in the near era, it used to be an asset.
How do you know about these things, monkey? No, don't tell me a secret. Now tell me later, otherwise. Then it won't be a secret.
Well, I mean, I'm sharing with everyone.
There is no secret.
I have lots of experience on LSD.
You told your secret.
So I'm just sharing my secret. But I've heard and read books about one of that kind. There's a chap called Leary. He had written psychedelic influences and books like that. I happen to read that.
So what has that to do with any philosophy, by the way?
Well, I was just telling you, in the morning this will vanish, this influence, you know, and then that fear which has vanished will come back
again. Yeah. I remember when I was at the university, changing the subject a little bit, I remember watching a movie, it was an arty movie about the beginning of it was the Russian tanks crushing the uprising in Hungary in 1957, 56, or something like that. So, and then it showed one man who was a powerful hypnotist magician type. And it showed a picture of him confidently standing before a Russian tank, and with his power of focus of his attention, he was, I would have to say, attempting to stop it before it rolled over him. That is what the confidence of him. He was confidently standing, and by the power of his attention, and then the Russian tank just simply rolled over him. Yes.
One Chinese boy, he was a student. He stood against the class when the Chinese tried to suppress this independent movement and democratic movement, and he was crushed.
With full confidence.
Yes. Well,
that's the philosophical point here, that with full confidence that I can stand up, I will stop that tank. I'll do it. And then
that was well commented in the body practice, and very true. Everybody saw that happen.
Yeah, but I wanted to bring it back to the philosophy. just for a minute. We can talk about that after.
You got it.
Okay. Yes.
When problems prevail, people project themselves as big guys, as actors or musicians or politicians or playwrights, saying that they're addicted to intoxication or trying to treat the depression or have mental breakdowns. Or,
yeah.
And in psychology, they call it overcompensation, which means the person feels internally very unhappy, so they try and project themselves. They try everything to project themselves in a big way in the world.
Which is coming from a basic insecurity.
Yeah, insecurity and happiness for them.
And a dishonesty. Yes?
Although psychologists don't say it's dishonest, but they call it overcompensation. Project myself in the world in a big way, then that will compensate for the internal emptiness of that thing.
Yes. And everyone will think I'm wonderful.
Everyone will think I'm enjoying a lot.
Yeah, and become envious of me.
But actually, I'm not being treated with clinical depression.
Okay, last question or comment.
You said in the last lecture you have to speak Krishna and everything. It's easy to sometimes for us to say to other people who are preaching. But how do we become self-realized that it's actually Krishna?
Practice. Purification and practice. We have to purify the heart and we practice preaching to ourselves. Because it's easy to say to others, so we should preach to ourselves, and we should also become purified. And then we try it. We see, is Krishna's mercy really in this experience? And then gradually we learn that nothing is separate from Krishna's mercy. Even that some people are talking while the class is going on is not separate from Krishna's mercy somehow or another.
Oh, and by the close of the container, it means the class is officially closed. Krishna's mercy. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Just, I wanted to make one, say one other thing, and then you can make the announcement. Okay. The Bhakti makes the class lively, doesn't he?
Is that the only value?
No, but I'm just saying he does do that.
What are we doing next week?
We should all go to Jamuna Nagar. Yes, now the announcement.